We are in Shaar Gimel Perek Yud Beis, and as we're going to learn, the story until now, and this is a sort of a paradigm shift, if you will, in the whole Sefer, in my opinion, which is one of the reasons why I stopped here. We learned all the way through Shaar Nefesh HaChaim, just to refresh your memory. We learned about the different, like how the Shemayim works, the engineering of the Shemayim. The four worlds, Atzilus, Bria, Yetzirah, Asiya, the Sphiros. We learned about all that. We can make full charts about what that is. But one thing is for sure, that there is a place in Shemayim where it's Einoid Milvadoi. Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. It's just Echad. And in that Echad, in that place of Echad, whatever that means, there's no Tov, there's no Ra, there's no darkness, there's no light. Hashem Echad, just one thing.
And that's
the Ein Sof. I've explained a number of times that, you know, the idea of being able to do tshuva until you get to the point of zdonos nasa kischuyos, that your averis could actually become mitzvahs, which is, makes no sense at all. It means that the tshuva has reached a place where there is no tov and ra. So therefore, everything can be mishapich and repurposed. An averis could even be repurposed because it's a whole new or. Yes? And this is the Marechet HaShemayim. Until the world gets into the world of, from Atzilus, which is near Hashem, if you will, Eitzel Hashem. Bria, is we know, is the place of the Kisei HaKavod and where the Neshamas were created. Tachas Kisei HaKavod. Yitzira is where everything starts to divvy up. Yitzira, that's what Yitzira means. Something from something divided up. So, I mean, the obvious example or the obvious mushel of this is that, you know, they told us all, when we stand under the chuppah, two neshamas are becoming one. As they were, l'katchila. Well, not just two neshamas were one, but all the neshamas of Klal Yisrael were one. So that's the transition from Bria to Yetzirah to Asiya. We're in a world of division, which is why there's so many wars and so much sinas chinam and but also, it's a good thing. Division is a good thing because I'm an individual, you're an individual, every blade of grass is individual. It would be like if all the grass would be one piece of grass, it would be fake grass. the whole thing is that everything is different. Every fruit is different. That's the beauty of the Bria. The uniqueness is the beauty of the Bria. But that's the world of Asiya, which has in it its inherent dangers. Pirud has in it many, many dangers. So that's what we have to deal with. Let me just finish this point. So if we understand how the world works, and we understand here it's Echad and here it's divided, and we need to get back to Echad, so now that's our avoda of mitzvahs, etc. But what Perek Yud Beis is talking about, which is a much bigger chiddush than anything that we've learned so far, is that in the engineering of this, in the mechanics of this, as much as we can understand about what Hashem did, not only he's Echad and we're here, not only do we have to bring it back together, but we can actually have a hand and a say in what's going on here and coming down. Understand? Like, in other words, we can actually affect the way the world is created and recreated every second. And we could actually, even though we live in a world of Alma de Piruda, we live in a world of Asiya, we can actually change the Teva sometimes. Hence, you have such a thing as miracles, or miracle workers, even more important. And I'm just going to, as an aside, politically, Reb Chaim Volozhin was very against miracle workers. Meaning, and he's going to explain why, I believe, without saying so in Perek Yud Beis, meaning this idea to him of a Baal Mofes, or, you know, some Chacham or some Rebbe or whoever it might be. Remember, he wasn't that far after Shabtai Tzvi. you know, being able to do miracles, meaning manipulate the Shemayim, manipulate the Shemayim, this was something which he considered to be, I don't think wrong, but dangerous.
What is a manipulating Shemayim instead of manipulating Teva?
Well, that's exactly what he's going to talk about. The difference, excellent. The difference, what you can do, what you can't do, what's right, what's wrong. But what I'm saying is I think, and I shouldn't even say this, but I'm saying it anyway, that I think to a certain extent, maybe the whole Sefer, but certainly this Shaar Gimel, Perek Yud Beis, is a polemic against the miracle workers. I think that's part of what's going on. It's an unbelievable thing, by the way, Agav, how many people are looking for this? I mean, I'm no Rebbe, I'm no Baba, I'm nothing, you know, but there are people come and they ask for a miracle. like, what do you want me to do? And people come to, like, you know, just Joe Rabbi to... Yeah, yeah. Or more common is people looking for segulas and ways to manipulate the Teva in a way that's not natural. So it's fascinating that this is where people are looking, and we're going to explain how this is. In my fourth introduction before I say anything, this morning after davening, I was explaining a little bit of Kiddush Levana. So Kiddush Levana, which was an enigmatic ceremony that we do. You know, everybody goes out of shul and points to the moon and starts to jump up and down and dance. It's kind of a strange, you know, it feels pretty tribal, if anything. It doesn't feel very, very Jewish. And we dance and we jump up and down and Shalom Aleichem in the middle. And it's like a bit of a strange thing. But like Be'etzem, and I mean, that's not something we should explain now, but I just want to make really two points about it, which is Nogei L'Didon. And that is that the bracha of Kiddush Levana, Baruch Atah Hashem Echadish Chadoshim, is a bracha of nature, Teva. Let me just show you something. Is that a sitter? Right here? Just give me Kiddush Levana. If you don't. It means to say that what we're going outside and admiring, if you will, the things that don't change in this world, like the moon, like the sun, Asher b'mamorei barashchakim, with his maimer, Hashem's maimer, he created the heavens, uberach b'kol tzivam, and all of the hosts of Shemaim, the constellations, everything is all according to him. Chok uzman nasan lahem, he gave them a tafkid, he gave them a chok, shelo yishanu es tafkidam, and he made them swear, and this is very nogeya us, this is the lashon of Chazal, you're never allowed to change. Sun, no matter how many wars there are, no matter how many nuclear plants there are, sun, you go up in the morning, you set at the night. This is what you're going to do. Moon, you travel around the earth. This is what you do. These things, shel yishanu es tafkidam, sasim usmechem lasis etzein kaidam, and they're happy to do it. This is my job. This is my job to travel around the earth. Poyel emes shupolase emes. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the poyel emes. This is very important. Poyel emes, emes in the Lashon of Chazal means something that's lasting and everlasting. It's real, it's true. It's not a passing cloud, it's not a phase. It's emes. Emes emes is the same as midas hadin. Midas hadin is the same as teva, elokim. So that's the emes. Which one of the others want to always go with emes? Yaakov. Titain, emes liyakov. So this bracha we make on nature, if you will, for lack of a better word, on teva, and immediately we say, Baruch Yoytzreich, Baruch Oysech, Baruch Koinech, Baruch Boirech, Yoytzreich, Yud, Ayin, Kuf, Beis, you see it? Baruch Yoytzreich, Baruch Oysech, Baruch Koinech, Baruch Boirech, we say to the moon, basically we're talking to the moon, blessed is your Yotzreich, Yud, Ayin, Kuf, Beis, Yaakov, Emes. Because Teva is Emes. What you have also here is, you don't say it, No, okay, Rashi Tevis. I want to hear the questions, but I have a very short, so forgive me. But we'll get to it in a second. The other thing you see here, which is so important for us and our learning and also for Kiddush Levana, is you see Atzilus Bria Yitzira Asiya. Konech is Hashem, Atzilus. And then from there, you go to Atzilus Bria Baruch Borech, to Yitzira, which is Yotzrech, to Asiya, which is our world, which is Osech. So we're talking about the Marechet HaTeva. We're talking about how things get from the place of Echad to the place that we live here. Konech, same, it's synonymous with Atzilus. We say to the moon, Baruch Konech, right? Baruch Borech, Bria, Baruch Yotzrech, Yitzira, Baruch Osech, Asiya, which all equals in Rashi Tevis Yaakov. So I'm not saying Torah Lucha. I'm just saying that's the pshat. That's the pshat in this sentence, which follows naturally to after the fact that we are we're not praying to the moon, but we are saying to the moon, wow, what an unbelievable natural phenomenon, a reliable phenomenon that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created. And just to make sure, so nobody thinks that we're in any way praying to the moon, afterwards we say, Aleinu l'shabeach l'adon hakol. We talk to Hashem and we talk to each other and we say Aleinu l'shabeach l'adon hakol asos gedulei yitzbreishis shehei mishtachavim lehavel urik. They're davening to moons and things like that. They're being oved avodah zarah. We're talking to you. We're just complimenting and admiring the moon and the teva. And part of the teva is that rishoyim have no existence to them. Tipul aleim efen v'fachad. People are lame, a must of a fachat. Excuse me. Bigdol zereacha yidmu ka'oven. Agav, it's a sort of a curse, right? People are lame, a must of a fachat. Talking about the Rishayim. In your teva, let the Rishayim all drop dead. And then we turn to our neighbor immediately, we say, Shalom Alecha. that's the pshat. Managed to hear. Don't think I'm cursing you.
I wasn't talking to you.
I wasn't talking to you. Right. There are paranoid people standing next to you. I'm telling you. I'm one of them. So, cursing me for it. Shalom Aleichem, Shalom Aleichem, Shalom Aleichem. Everybody around you, Shalom Aleichem. And they give you a bracha, and that's not what we mean. Okay, so that's the Kiddush Levana, but that's the Mareches HaShemayim as it comes down to Aretz, and important for us. Okay, let's just, what do you want to say?
I don't
want to
take us off topic. So.
Okay, don't.
So this world is a reflection, a projection of everything that's written in the Torah. But the word Teva is not written in the Torah.
Elohim. Rachel's Bar Elohim is Gematria Teva.
Why the word Teva itself?
I mean, that is Teva. In other words, the whole Parshat Bereishis. Why the word Teva? I don't know the history of the word, but what we do know is the whole story of Bereishis, Parshas Bereishis, that we read that last week, is a Parsha about Brias HaTeva. There's a sun, there's a moon, there's clouds, there's rain, there's water, there's oceans.
It could be that even Teva conjures up. Run by itself, but it's not.
Okay.
It's
okay, but it's Elohim. And Yaakov, just to reiterate the point, because it's a very important point, is that, you don't find, Yaakov had his miracles, but you don't find that the pshat in Yaakov Avinu was a miraculous life. I mean, he had his miracles, but it wasn't the nes nigla of walking through furnaces of fire and things like that. That wasn't what it was all about. What it was about was what Yaakov Avinu, the Bechir Sheva Avos, what he brought into this world, literally, was that the world, this is the world, this is Hashem's world, let's work with it. And he always had Shema Yigrem Hadin. I don't want to, like, he knew he could do miracles like any of his father and grandfather, but Shema Yigrem Hadin, he's worried about Teva, or what we call the Shadarabba, the Hashkacha Klolus of the union. Like, he was concerned about this Nakuda. Yeah.
Just getting back to the point you made earlier, where
riles against miracle workers. But at no point, and he certainly wouldn't do this, would he say that miracles don't happen. Miracles do happen all the time.
But then, now, and forever.
The sun was stopped. This is the constant of the sun, on at least one occasion that we're aware of, it stopped.
No, but it's actually a perfect segue to reading this text right now, because what he's saying here is not that miracles don't happen. Obviously, miracles happen. We're breathing. I mean, there's...
But they're done by Hashem.
Right. No, it's more sophisticated. Yes, but yes, I believe. But it's more sophisticated than that, because how does it work? What's the mechanism? What we're learning right now, and this introduction is extremely important, is what is the, let's say it even better, what are the possible mechanisms for changing the teva? There might be a number of ways to do it. There might be good ways to do it. There might be bad ways to do it. I'm not talking about fake ways to do it. That's a different, that's a different schmooze, sheker. But there might be ways to actually change the teva, and it means nothing. Simple example, kishuf. Kishuf is some type of a mechashef loisechaya. The Torah tells us that there's such a thing as this, let's call it the black magic of some sort. There is such a thing of it, and you will encounter it, says the Torah, when you go into Eretz Yisrael specifically, because the Canaanim were experts in this, and the Egyptians were one thing, and Kamais Eretz Yisrael loisasu, Kamais Eretz Canaan loisasu. You have to go with your own derech, which was a very sophisticated derech going into Eretz Yisrael. But kishuv is not fake. There's one opinion in the Gemara in Sanhedrin and Chelek which says he thinks it's fake. They said, what do you mean? Like the Torah talks about it. But the Roiv, Hillel, Shammai, Roiv, Tanoim, and Jewish tradition is that it's a real thing. What does it prove? If somebody could actually, levitate. nobody can levitate. But let's say somebody can levitate. So what has he proven? Is he God? Is he a miracle worker? He's defied gravity, which is a law of nature. So this is what we're talking about. Zehu inyan shedarshu chazal. So again, the introductory sentences, until now we've been learning about what the whole marechet is. Here now we're going to learn about how we can affect that marechet. This is in a good way and a bad way. Zehu ha'inyan shedarshu chazal al posik ki Hashem hu ha'alaikim ein oid milvadai. That's a posik in Devarim. It says, Omar Rabbi Chanina in Chulan Dav Zayin Omid Beis afilu kishofim. Kishofim, kishof. Afilu kishofim. Ein oid milvadai. There's only one power in this world. Comes the Gemara, Omar Rabbi Chanina. That means that power is even bigger than kishof. That's where we're going with the Einoid Mavada? Yes. Kichol says, let's read this carefully. Kichol inyanei pe'ulais ha-kishofim, all of this kishof, everyone comfortable with the term kishof? Because I don't know if I'm translating it correctly. Let's call it just
black magic.
So kol inyanei pe'ulais ha-kishofim nimshach me'ha-koiches ha-tuma. Where does kishof get its power from? From tuma. Shel hamerkava temeya. Vehu inyan chachmas hakishuv shahayu hasanhedrin srichim leida. And Sanhedrin have to know how to work this thing. Hainu, I'm going to explain to you, not to worry. Hainu chachmas shemus hatuma viyadias inyane koiches hamerkava temeya bishmoiseyim. That the Chazal, Sanhedrin, they understood the chachma of Shemais. When we think of Shemais, we think of Yudke Vavke, Elohim. There are Shemais HaTuma. V'yidiyas, and knowledge of Inyanei Koichas HaMerkava Tumeya, the knowledge of Tuma, according to their names, Shal Yodam Yifalu, and through knowing these things, they could actualize Balei HaKishufim Pe'ulais V'inyanim Mishunim. They're able to do very unusual and strange things. So I'm going to explain to you what these words mean. And by the time you walk out of here today, we'll all be able to levitate.
Levitate.
Levitate up. No, we don't levitate. We gravitate.
Get the broom to sweep by its
Right. Could do more than that. What?
No,
Yeah, yeah. All over. All over. All over. All over. So let me explain the Maharaka, please. Bear with me. Replace the word tuma in this paragraph and possibly everywhere. Just replace it in our minds with a new word called klipa. And it'll become much easier to understand. Klipa translates as bark of a tree, shell of a nut, peel of an orange. It's all klipas.
Separation.
Like a protective device. A protective device which Hashem put into the Bria. I don't pretend to understand this at all because the Arizal said he doesn't understand. I'm just explaining what Moshe Kibel knew. And that is that if you'll take any of those metaphors, but if you'll take an orange, if it would grow without a peel, by the time it gets to your table, it would be inedible. The peel is you'll take a peanut, and it would grow not with a shell, you wouldn't be eating those peanuts. They would be destroyed, infested, crushed, etc. So the peanut, do you know this, that a little bit of trivia, that the entire cardboard corrugation industry is based on the structure of a peanut. Because if you'll crack a peanut, you'll see the strings going through it, and you'll see that it gets corrugated like this. This is all Hashem's ways of protecting and creating pressure points that will not destroy the beautiful peanut. So
that's the matanis that Avram gave to protect them.
The klipas. Yeah. So very good to protect them. So a klipa and tuma in every application. In every application is a good thing in the Bria. You know, like the Mekubalim say you shouldn't learn Tanakh at night because it breaks the Malachi Tmeim. Okay, so that sounds like a good thing. It's not a good thing. They're there. They're supposed to be there. As much as if you take a electricity, you have to have a positive and a negative. As much as a tree has to have bark, and as much as a peanut has to have a shell, and such a shell, like a corrugated shell, that can withstand the pressure of who knows how many pounds. It's a pliatsuma, and yet we can open it and crack it and eat the peanut. So if you replace tuma with klipa, and just even, I don't want to get into it right now, but even think of tumas nida, which has to do with the restructuring of the endometrium which is there to protect a child. It's its purpose, to protect a fetus. It's you know, without getting into it, it's unbelievable how every good thing has a klipa, including us. But the whole Bria has these klipas. Now,
this expression itself, you don't use the word too much, but the animals, it's wrong with the word.
Because maybe we'll explain that. You can use that tuma for your own purposes. It's a strong power in the Bria. You can use it for your own purposes. You can repurpose it incorrectly. And this is what we're learning. This is not an easy thought, but it's extremely fundamental and very, very important that so let's understand klipos as a little bit deeper, or how it works. The Arizal tells us in Eitz Chaim, four klipos on every piece of tov. Four klipos on every tov. Take the peanut, tov. The nut inside of the peanut is tov. I'm saying a metaphor. It's surrounded by this beautiful little, brown wrapping Klipa 1. And over that, there's white stuff. That's Klipa 2. The shell, Klipa 3, etc. So there's different levels of protective devices protecting that. Hashem really liked the peanut. It's like, yeah. No, but that, like, we also have Klipas. Our people have Klipas protecting us. So the idea here is not to eat the Klipa and not to use the Klipa for what was not intended to. But let's call Klipa Tumah. So what you have is, let me speak in Kabbalistic language for a moment, you have four Klipas. You have Shalosh Klipas Hatemeos, Daika, and you have a Klipas Noga. It's fascinating because there are always in the Bria, I think only Jews know this, there are three levels of Klipa, which are called Tameh, Klip Shalosh Klipas Hatmeyos. Hence we say in V'la Malshini Malti Sikva, which is fascinating, by the way, because every bracha in Shemoneh Esrei starts off with a bakasha. Refainu, slachlanu. This is v'la malshinim alti sikva hu. Who's not supposed to have tikva? The malshinim are those that badmouth us. And alti tikva hu. How do you daven that? So let's la malshinim. The different nuschais, b'chol amcha Yisrael, b'chol oivei amcha Yisrael, all the enemies of Israel, se'aker, se'shaber, se'mager, v'sachnia, se'aker, klipa 1, se'shaber, klipa 2, se'mager, whatever that means, klipa 3, Visachnia Klipas Noga. Because the Klipas Noga, if I stick with my mushel of that little brown skin around the peanut, you can eat it, not eat it. Okay, no, you know. I mean, there are those people. Depends on how you were trained as a child. Those people that like to take it off. A little bit of skin, those people, again, some, many, many fruit, kumquats, they have a Klipa, but you can eat the Klipa. In fact, it's healthy. To eat the Klipa. You know, very few people are going to eat, you can eat an apple peel, but very people are going to eat like a big thick orange, you know, just eat it. So in the Bria, you have Shalosh Klipas HaTameah, and then this in between, is a Klipa, is it Ochel? That's called Klipas Noga. What does Noga mean? Shines. So the Toiv of the peanut actually shines through this final, very, very thin klipa. And that can be used l'toiv, and that can be used l'ra. In other words, you can stop at the klipa and say, this is the peanut, or you can go to the full intention of the bria. Everybody following me here? You see, you know, if the United States kills al-Baghdadi, so the whole world applauds of the killing of the Russia, the murderer, the Rotzeach, the Klipa. But comes a bunch of men with suits and ties, and they call themselves BDS, let's say. I'm saying a mushroom, I'm not talking politics. Klipas Noga. Why is it a Klipas Noga? Because they're talking about equality, they're talking about human rights. They're talking about, the acceptance of other people, all the things that are music to our ears. And they're talking anti-Semitism. So, nobody's thinking of Osama bin Laden or al-Baghdadi as a human rights activist. But he is. He's saying, I'm doing the will of God, and that's why I'm going to kill everybody in this room. That's what he's saying. But okay, we understand the gross level of tumah. But when it comes to the klipas noga, many, many people fall in. Perhaps most people fall in. Emes? So all these things are metaphors. I'm not talking about it. I'm just talking in mashal, because it, you got to work out yourself. So, when Hashem created the world, He created its bria with its klipos. Shalosh klipos hatmeyos and klipas noiga, which is tameh mitzad echad and kedusha mitzad sheni. And hence you always have that level of klipa is the most dangerous level of klipa, because it sounds so good. It sounds so real. It sounds so caring. And that's where we have to, you know, you need the chais gedolim and Jewish Masorah to understand maken malo. This is the very complicated thing.
You're saying that it can be good. It can become good. The klipas noga.
It is, does become good, but and it's a protective device, and it's even an edible device. But it could also be abused. You can, I'll tell you how it could be abused. You can take a lot of that stuff, the skins alone, just because I read that this is true. You could take the skins alone, which have enough energy from the peanut itself, grind it up, disguise it, and make peanut butter out of it. And if nobody's done it, it's a great idea. It has, listen to this. It has the, when ground up, it has the texture of peanuts. It has the taste of peanuts. It has the smell of peanuts. And it even has some of the vitamins of peanuts.
The corrugated shell, inside the skin.
And, you know, it's kimada peanut, but it's not a peanut. That's where you got to be a real taste expert and chemist to be able to know, is this a peanut? Is this nishkin peanut? You need to know what the story is. Like, what is it? And, you know, so many things like that in the industrial world are not real. Like, you know, they're just taken, they're close enough to real, taking some of maybe the vitamins and stuff of real, but it's like, you know, like it's just chalbonim and things like that. It's not the real thing. I mean, this is the trick of food manufacture. It's all klipas noga. Nobody's gonna take corrugated peanut shells and sell them and think they're gonna make money. But that's El Baghdadi. But what you can do is get very, very close to it and make a lot of money, because then you can sell two things, right? So that's the again, I speak in mashal. Yeah.
What about things I found in both cases where you had like a big rough who was able to sort of penetrate and tell people certain things that, like, the big, yeah, now they're sitting in jail because they abused women, for example. So what were
or
they
stole money or
what,
did
what were they
what were they accessing? Okay. What were they accessing? This is exactly what the chapter is about. Like, are miracle workers accessing Kedusha here or Tumah? That's the question. But the question he's going to tell us is even deeper. That in you can access, in the shells itself, you can take the Tov out of the Klipas Noga. That's also a possibility, which minor Rebbes can do. Or you can do sort of the brisker thing and get above the whole thing into the Hashem Echad. And I would just, like, Rav Chaim Volozhin, meaning like this, there's two ways, I'm going to cheat ahead for a minute, there's two ways to possibly manipulate the Bria. Three ways. One way is a bad way. You're selling peanut skins. Klipas, you're using the Klipas Noga. Another way is a good way. It's a byproduct of the peanut skin. Let's do something with it. Let's make medicine with it. Let's do good stuff with it. It's a byproduct, which is very, very valuable. So it's like sort of like genetic engineering. So you can play on that level, possibly, if you know how. And the Sanhedrin, he tells us in this paragraph, had to be baki b'kishuf. Kishuf means they knew how to manipulate the klipas noga as well as the soothsayers did, and thereby they were able to understand, not that they held it was mutter to do. You can do this. In other words, apparently the Torah is saying if you have the chachma, you can perform some sort of a miracle by playing with the klipas noga, But it's hard to discern. There's a third way. There's Tov, there's Ra. And the third way is getting above the whole thing into the arena of Einoid Milvado. And in the Einoid Milvado,
no shlita
at all. The whole thing has nothing to do with it.
What's practical Kabbalah? Where is that fit in this?
Down here. That's the difference between Kabbalah Maasi. You see, there's a story of the Brisker Rav. Not the story you're thinking of. There's a story of the Brisker Rav where somebody said to him that he was ill and he needed some type of a miracle. I don't remember the details of it. And he wants to go to a certain rabbi that the Brisker Rav criticized, a certain miracle worker, I don't know if he's a rabbi, a certain miracle worker to take care of the problem. And that miracle worker was Baduk Umanusa, tested that his things come true. And somebody presented the Brisker Rav with this here in Eretz Yisrael, this was. And the Brisker Rav reportedly, you know, the guy's sick. This is pressure. The guy's sick. What would we do? And what's, you know, the Brisker Rav reportedly put his head down on his Gemara for a number of minutes. And he picked up his head. This is a once-in-a-lifetime story with the Brisker Rav. And he said, you'll have a refuah shleima.
Without going.
And I heard the story, by the way, from Beryl Soloveitchik, his son, personally. But the sons of the Brisker Rav, which were present, you know, asked him, like, you know, like, you know, you're so against this type of a thing. So he said that anything that the Mekubalim can do here, you can do also with Teru Lishma and completely internalizing the concept of Einoid Milvado. Meaning, I can take the situation and move it to here. And this is based on this Nefesh HaChaim, I believe. And I had to show that everybody can bring this to a higher place.
That's Bria?
To the world of Bria. Now, to be sure, this is not like a magical, you know, I've done it many times, didn't work at all. I fall asleep, but Brisker Rav was a Brisker Rav. He was a guttle, you know. But,
Marseillaise?
Baba Trev and the Marseillaise? You know, that was Klipas Noga?
I don't know, but I'm saying Baba Trev was a very big man. What's the question? But different than Ramosha Feinstein, right? So, you know, like Rav Soloveitchik often sent people with huge problems. They'd come to him. He would say, "You have to go to Lubavitch Rebbe. Like he knows how to do this." Or Soloveitchik, who was the ultimate litvak.
Why did Brisker Rav want to avoid going to this guy who was working here, which is okay?
He thought it's too dangerous to know whether this is real or not real, whether it's klipa's toy, whether it's this side of the klipa, that side of the klipa. It's dangerous in the sense that people can become worshipping this thing instead of going back to the Shemayim, and he didn't want to do it. That was the Brisker Rav's Kabbalah from the Gra. Of course you can go there, and that's the chop in the story. Of course you can go there, but it's not. You know, I must have. We're time's up in 1 minute, so I'm going to stop this. I just want to tell you this. Last night I went to a chasana, and a big chasana, and I was called to read the Ksuva. So big covet. Read the Ksuva, went up to read the Ksuva, and I started reading it, B'Simen Tov, Mazel Tov, B'Ravi, B'Shabbos, and I said to myself, it's not Wednesday, it's Thursday. So then I thought to myself, this is all under a lot of pressure, you know, the lights, everything, photographers, huh? Okay, so it could be they wrote it before Shkia, so it was really Wednesday, this was my thought process, but then it has to say Rosh Chodesh Cheshvan. Because if it was on Wednesday, then it was Rosh Chodesh, and it didn't say Rosh Chodesh Cheshvan. So I looked at the Masada Kedushin, which thank God I wasn't, and I said, It's a lo yom revi'i hayom. So 8 o'clock at night. So they were writing the ksuva right before the chuppah. So he looks at me and he read it anyway. Okay. So read it anyway. Then after the kriyas haksuva, before the brachas, so they took a 20-minute break, and the Masadar Kedushin wrote the ksuva with his handwritten. He didn't have a spare, so he wrote the whole thing out. So that was the story. And so it was my story last night. But the Masadar Kedushin was Rosh Hashiva. So made a mistake. I mean, you know, if your head's in the Torah and Limud, so you forget what day it is. Okay, fair enough. But you know, if you're a Rav, you have to know what day it is. that's the difference, you know. But anyway, so he came over to me afterwards. He says, "I don't know where my head was," and you know. So I was just looking at, you know, it's okay. I mean, it doesn't bother me. I did read a Shtar Mezuyah, but it's okay. You know, you fixed it, Baruch Hashem. So I told him. I said, "I'll tell you a story. I once heard that just reminded me of the story that Rav Soloveitchik, Olav Shalom, New York, Rav Yosher Berra. So he was very, very bedactic in ksuvas, and he often." He often would bring 8-9 ksuvas to a chasana when he was Masadar Kedushin and rewrite it. It was a known thing. Or it would take a long time to Masadar, very didactic and handwriting, everything about it. So he was called once, not to be Masadar Kedushin, but he was called to do Kriyas HaKsuva. And it was a beautiful, beautiful ksuva, maybe like a $10,000 ksuva. Yeah. Calligraphy ksuva, and Soloveitchik is looking at it before he reads it, and he says, "This is in ganzen nicht richtig." And he took the beautiful $10,000 ksuva and he ripped it. Maisa Shahaya. So they said, "You know, Rebbe, we don't have a ksuva now. Like, what are we supposed to do?" So he said, "Give me a piece of paper." He's done the back of a piece of paper. Not a napkin, but something of that nature. I think it was the piece that they called the kibudim written out. So he took a pen and he wrote the whole ksuva correctly on this piece of paper. And that's the ksuva that they used at the chuppah. So that's the story. But afterwards, they said to him, "Rebbe, like, how could you rip up such a valuable ksuva?" So he said, right, Nezikin. So he said, "Trust me, this napkin will be worth much more than this ksuva." Right, the Smithsonian Institute will sell this for $1 million. Right, that's the story.